After years on the road, Timmy parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me. This is episode 97, and this is Fallon Bowman, formerly of Kitty, and then we also have the ladies and gentlemen of the Roach Coach podcast on this week. So it's going to be a lot of fun, a very action-packed episode, a lot of great stuff for you. Make sure you are subscribed to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podcast Addict, however you get your podcasts. And make sure you are leaving a nice five-star rating, a nice five-star review. There are no reviews this week, so nothing to read. You guys need to take that time and head over to your iTunes and leave a nice five-star rating, a nice five-star review. If you would like a Talk To Me sticker, make sure you are reaching out. If you have not received your Talk To Me sticker, make sure you have reached out to me and tell me, hey, I never got it in the mail. Everyone should have gotten their stickers by now, and if you have not gotten one, then there must have been a mix-up at the post office, which I'm pretty sure that's not too far-fetched. So we also like to do shout-outs for sharing, and that's shout-outs for sharing on Facebook and Twitter. We had two interviews last week. We had the Wendy Dio episode, and then I gave you guys a bonus interview with Doyle of the Misfits. A lot of people shared and retweeted those episodes, so I wanted to just say thank you to each and every one of you out there. And we'll just throw them all together here. So we've got to give a nice shout-out to Yvette Hernandez, John's Untitled Podcast, Matthew Powers, Trapper Kane, Alan Tate, Danny Gilliatt, Scott Sullivan, Metal Nexus wrote a nice review of the Doyle episode, James C. Harrison, Kenneth Waugh, Chris Sinzak of the Decibel Geek Podcast, Jane Says, Joel Baggett, Shane Herbert, sorry if I said that crazy, Hyborian, Martin Bush of Hyborian shared it, Martin Bush was also on the Wendy Dio episode, Zach from Bleed TV also did it, and man, what about the Outsiders getting canceled? I'm so bummed about that. Oh, two episodes left, and I'm just bummed. But Zach from Bleed TV, love those guys over there. Barrett Stevens, Josh Balboa, Ear Peeler, thanks Vic out there, and also a huge shout out to Blabbermouth for sharing the Wendy Dio episode. Never thought I would be making Dio hologram news, but she had some Dio hologram news on there that shared and went a little viral. So it's always great to see that. So like I said, I've got an action-packed show for you guys this week, so we're going to go ahead and get into the Talk To Me cover of the week, and that's brought to you by MetalNexus.net. Make sure you're heading over there for all your interview news, tour reviews, and album reviews. No ego, just metal. Step into the Nexus at www.metalnexus.net. And with this interview and this episode being super new metal, I had to pull out the most super new metal cover of all time. I always wondered if I was going to use it on this podcast, but today is the day that we do Limp Bizkit's Faith. So you guys sit back, relax, enjoy Limp Bizkit's Faith, and then we will talk to the Roach Coach podcast.
Hey, this is Kyle from Hell Yeah, and I'm with your boy Josh Toomey with Talk To Me. Get it.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like me, but I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play, 'cause I play them too. Oh, but I need some time off from that emotion. Time to pick my heart up off the floor. That love comes down without devotion. Well, it takes a strong man, baby, but I'm showing you that door. Rock, gotta have
another who tied me down to the love of one. showing you that door where I gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Get the fuck up.
That was Limp Bizkit's Faith, and we are now joined by the Roach Coach Podcast. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great.
Doing great.
Yeah.
Introduce yourselves so everybody knows who we're talking to.
Hi, I'm Matt Noss.
I'm Jen.
I'm Lauren.
Man, I just have to say, and I've talked about you guys on the podcast many times and just, you know, kind of looking for random podcasts and stumbling upon you guys. You guys, not just because you're on the show, but you guys do such a fantastic product, and I'm gonna, you know, blow a little smoke up your skirts, but the dynamic that you three have, you can't buy that. You couldn't be put together by a studio, you know, with Lauren, who is huge into nu metal. Kind of, I could just totally picture him being like a little nu metal nerd back in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then you got
nailed it.
And then, you know, you got, you know, Jenny, who's, it seems like she dated nu metal nerds back in the day, but she didn't necessarily like the nu metal. And then you got Matt, who's just like kind of not into it at all. So it's kind of this cool little mix of trio you guys have going there.
Yeah, I don't know. We all have come to nu metal in our very own and different ways. So it's fun to go back and listen to the albums again, or sometimes for the first time, and just try to figure out what we think is great and what we think is terrible, and that's it.
And what deserves to be in the canon, yeah.
Yeah, Lauren, break down the canon for us, because I think it's a great idea of this podcast.
So basically, my thought was I read an article on Stereo Gum where they talked about the 20th anniversary of Sepultura's Roots, and they said it was the greatest nu metal album of all time. And at the time, I was not really familiar with it, and I was like, really? Like, that's the one? And then I sort of, you know, dug around on the internet a little bit, and I was like, there doesn't seem to be much consensus about this type of thing, because no one really likes nu metal. People seem to really dislike it. And so any sort of lists you find are really, really tongue-in-cheek, or they're talking about a bunch of bands no one's ever heard of, or they say things like underrated nu metal albums, and number one's Linkin Park, Hypertheory,
right,
the biggest selling nu metal album of all time. So I was like, there isn't really any sort of canon to really sit down and go, what is the best of this genre, and also to, you know, because people don't really respect it. And so I felt like, I mean, it was at one point like the most popular music in the country, I mean, with the biggest bands. So I thought, I mean, that's not really a footnote. I think that's something to really be explored. And Jenny and I, we had, like, since we first met, we'd just always be talking about Limp Bizkit and other bands like that. And like we do improv together, we do improv shows together, and somehow we'd work in a long conversation about Korn into a set.
Yeah.
And to mixed results from the audience. And so it seemed like a no-brainer. Like, when I thought of this idea, and I couldn't find anybody else doing a nu metal podcast exclusively, I basically texted you and was like, let's do it. You said, yeah. That was that.
Well, I think this genre of music is kind of like, you know, in the 90s when I was kind of getting into music, and into the late 90s when I was getting more into the nu metal era, and, you know, I bought the Korn album when it first came out, you know, Adrenaline when it first came out, and like that was my music. And the more it went on, the more it did kind of get super watered down. And you guys kind of talk about some of the things that I talk about too, like there was like that second wave of nu metal that just came in and just destroyed an entire genre. And around, you know, around the 2000, 2001, when everything just, you know, went all to hell. But the one thing with nu metal with me is I think it's kind of starting to come back around to where maybe it's getting a little bit more credibility or something.
You know, I went for years saying I was in a band called Primer 55, and it was almost like a, I don't even know what you want to say. It was almost like a scarlet letter or something. Almost like the glam bands were when I was a kid. Like glam for the longest time got shat on like constantly. Mm-hmm. But then now you're back to Poison playing arenas. You know, it's crazy how it's kind of all coming back around. And I think nu metal is kind of like, we're on that tip of all these bands kind of coming back and getting some notoriety that they didn't have when throughout the mid 2000s.
Yeah. I think what happened is the people who, you know, were initially into that kind of music when you're a teenager, you know, now you're maybe to an age where you're in your early mid 30s where you don't really care anymore about if you look or sound cool. You're just like, oh, I liked that. I'm willing to admit that I liked that. And then there's like a whole wave of teens who are into things that they consider to be nostalgic. This being 20 years ago, that's like the perfect time for people to latch on to things again. So they're getting all of their angst and latching on to some of these like lyrics and bands that have a lot of teen angst floating around.
Yes, there
metal.
Is.
So I think it's like a perfect, it's like a nice little, I don't know, serendipitous time for people to be into it again.
Well, Laura,
yeah, I think,
go ahead, Matt.
Well, I think for me because I wasn't a fan, when I take a listen to these records, that if you would have talked to me 20 years ago, I would have been like, I will never listen to this. this is the worst music. It 20 years removed, it just goes to show like how subjective taste is, and how if you just relax a little bit, you're going to find things that you're going to enjoy, and it doesn't have to be life or death. Like, there isn't a big global fight between Korn and Radiohead. Like, no. It's not happening.
No.
Nobody cares. You can relax a little bit.
Not yet.
Oh yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, throughout my teenage years, you know, even in like getting into like the old school thrash and stuff, you know, you took on band beefs as they were your own beefs. Like if Megadeth had an issue with Slayer, you know, you would pick a side or, you know, a lot of people would pick a Megadeth or Metallica side. And going on even into the nu metal stuff, you know, if this band had issues with that band, you actually cared about that stuff. And, you know, like Jenny was saying, with pushing into your, you know, pushing 40, like we all are, or seem to be, is like, all that stuff is just like, you know what, who cares about any of that stuff? Let's just listen to it for the music and things like that. And going back to a point Lauren made was, you know, when you started your podcast, there aren't very many nu metal podcasts. Like, you can find 800 glam podcasts or 80s podcasts or Kiss podcasts. But when it comes to like this genre, I think it's, you know, I think that's the one thing, like, you know, I was looking for other nu metal podcasts, found you guys. You know, I've had a ton of people come into my podcast coming through like the weirdest guests possible, like Spine Shank and Stuck Mojo. Like, people are looking for Spine Shank podcasts and they find that I interviewed the guitar player, or huge Stuck Mojo fans and find out that I've somehow interviewed almost the entire band at this point. Like, it's the most random guest that'll get people pulled in. You know, you would think it would be like the Megadeths and the Rob Zombie types, but no, it's like, yeah, I found you looking for Spine Shank. Wow.
Oh yeah, like I found that I can never predict what episode is going to get a lot of comments on Facebook and tweets and stuff like that. Like, stuff I think will be like a big hit. Like our Limp Bizkit episode for Significant Other, which we did like 2 hours, we just like went all deep in. That one we got basically, I think everyone was like, we know how this is gonna go. We know you guys love Limp Bizkit, and it had like a moderate reaction. But like the Edema episode, which,
Lord.
Oh my gosh, everyone's like, how could you not put that in the canon? You know, which I was like, not prepared for. What?
Yeah.
And yeah, so like all the time, people are, yeah, we're hearing from people that we would never think, like, that episode struck a chord. You know, I mean, a guy messaged us that he, in his message to us about the Vanilla Ice episode, was he realized that he had been listening to it for like 20 years. Like, he never stopped listening to it.
Wow.
And he's like typing the message like, oh my. Oh, wow. I guess so.
Well, I guess I like it.
I guess I love it.
That's great. Yeah. It's so funny. Like, when you, when I see what albums you guys are reviewing or you know trying to see if they're going to go in the canon or whatnot, I always try to put myself back in the Wayback Machine and try to figure out where I was at that time. And that, you know, that Vanilla Ice story, I think I told it on the podcast, but going into Tower Records in Nashville, Tennessee, and actually going up to the counter and being like, "Do you guys have the new Vanilla Ice album?" And the record store clerks laughing me out of the store. Because they were like, "Man, we were waiting for somebody to ask for this," and like just laughing at me. And I was like, "Man, it was, it's Vanilla Ice record, you know, produced by Ross Robinson. I had to have it, you know."
Seems like a no brainer to me now.
Yeah.
The angel was there.
The angel was there. Yeah.
What's maybe an album that you guys have gone into going, "Man, we're not going to like this at all," and then kind of come out of it? Maybe you even listen to it, in a rotational basis.
For me, the first thing that comes to mind is POD's Fundamental Elements of Southtown. I was not expecting to like that at all. And I just listened to it last week while I was on what we call new metal vacation, when we have a little time between recording. But yeah, that one really blew me away and I loved it.
I think the one that I always remember being like really surprised by was the Factory 81 one, because it was like this small album produced by local guys, and I remember thinking, "This is gonna be nothing." And it ended up being one of my favorite episodes, and the album just kind of blew us all away. I mean, not the whole thing made it into the canon, but it was such a surprise of a record.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Yeah, Matt.
Well, whenever I like a record, it's always like, "All right."
That is true.
That's true.
But I would say the one that I came out of the gate swinging against was the Mudvayne record.
Oh, that's right.
LD50.
That's right.
Because I had such issues with slap bass, which is ridiculous, and I understand how ridiculous it is. But by the end of the record, I was like, "This is a band that completely has a concept, went for it full-fledged, mm-hmm. unabashedly, and it worked." And I was like, "All right, I am wrong."
Oh, I thought of one other one, Disturbed. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, you guys.
How could we, yeah, Matt did not get the sickness.
Oh, my gosh. Geez,
it would have been my nightmare to have to admit to myself in 2004, if you told me that I was going to be singing the praises of Draymond, I would have just never left my dorm room. Yeah. But I love that Disturbed album.
That Disturbed album is so good. I actually, when we did the show, I checked it out of the library because I couldn't even imagine big thrifting it and like buying it for $4. And I have since bought it.
I feel like full of life now because I want to listen to that album again. I was feeling a little tired and now I'm excited.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I know how it sounds.
Being in the room while that was happening was the most unreal experience, because I was like, You guys have the sickness. It's official.
We still do. I think it's like you can't get rid of it. It's chronic. It.
Yeah. There's no inoculation.
Nope.
No.
Mm-mm. So we'll kind of do a couple more and then we'll get into my episode here. But with the canon, the one thing that I know you guys kind of talk about, and you know, first Korn album, you guys did not put in the canon. And are you guys still, are you guys regretting that at all at this point?
No, I think that when we went to do the first episode, we had a lot of time to plan out what the first like three we were gonna do, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But it seemed like we have to do the Korn album. And when we were making the list, we sort of were just like, "Well, yeah, that'll probably get in." Like, that just seemed to be the thing. And then when we sat down with it and I'm listening to it, Jenny listened to it what, 60 times?
I listened to it so many times. Ugh.
Yeah. And so when we sat down and we really started to break it down, we found that and then people do not agree with us on this. I mean that's the thing. Anytime a new person comes in, they'll be like, "Love the show, but you guys are wrong about Korn." And I mean, which is fine, but I think it's just that, I mean, we talk about it on the show, it's just like Korn has come so far from there and they're just kind of doing the same bits over and over again on that album.
Yeah.
And I mean, Blind is great. I Stand by Chutes and Ladders. Janine does not, but she allowed it to be put in the canon. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like, yeah, they were, we said on the episode, they were honing what they would eventually do better on later albums. So the hope is one day we'll put a whole album in. That's
yeah,
the hope.
Yeah. And I feel like didn't put the first Korn album in the canon is going to be on my epitaph when I die. It's a sentence that I didn't think would be said to me, but it has been said to me tens of times. And that's enough.
That is enough.
So I'll never live it down.
And certainly I've had friends who said, oh, I'll listen to your podcast, and then, and who had no idea. And then I had a guy text me and he goes, whoa, plot twist, Korn didn't get in the canon. And I said, all right, I think we're on to something, because, you know, if we're thinking about it that hard. And I know someone had messaged us saying, are you guys considering going back and re-listening and giving things another try? And at this point, I would say no, because we don't have the time for that. But I don't know. I feel very confident about it, because people will challenge us all the time, and I'll sit back and I'll think on it. And really, I don't, you know, I think about it. It's like Blind, rock solid. But like the second track, immediately it slows down.
Yeah.
You know?
And sometimes I think it kind of helps to keep us on track, because we'll listen to an album. It'll be neither terrible nor great. And it depends at that point, you know, it's going to kind of maybe depend more on how we feel emotionally that day. Like, does it go in or not? And sometimes when we're thinking about putting a full album in that there's nothing on it that we were super stoked about, but it was pretty solid, I think we do always go back to, well, we did not put the first Korn album in here. So like, how would we defend against, like, well, how would we defend putting this in against the fact that we did not put the full, first Korn album in there?
Yeah.
So keeps us honest.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely like, it's definitely a, I guess I agree 100%, you know, it being a plot twist, kind of going back into that Korn album and it not getting in. I was like, wow, like that's, you know, you can't say almost nu metal without saying the first Korn album. And for you guys to not put it in the canon, A, was crazy. And then B, it made me feel better that, that you guys, that you guys didn't put in the first Primer 55 album, which I think is, you know, nu metal as fuck, as someone would say. And please tell me that's going to be one of your t-shirts, but
maybe we might have to.
It needs to be.
Might have to do. We haven't printed them up yet, so yeah.
Because I think a good nu metal t-shirt has to have a big cuss word on it, like, and the fuck needs to be like in, you know, like half of the shirt. But
not a bad idea.
Yeah,
I'll give me my cut. Just we'll work on it. But and just you know, we'll go with one more thing. You know, going into all these nu metal albums, you know, and you guys just each individually answer this one. But you know, what makes a good nu metal album or nu metal song?
For me, and this is only for me, obviously, but the ones that tend to work the best have big riffs and huge hooks. Like, it's that's so lame, but it's also like, when I think of the songs that I pull out, when I think about the Limp Bizkit records, or when I think about the Deftone records, the songs that work for me are the ones that have, like, they are truly pop songs, but they're in this genre. And that is all I'm going to say without getting myself in more trouble.
I guess for me, when I think about the stuff that I really love, I guess I want it to truly rock super hard. But as Jenny would say, not too hard. But I do want it to rock really big. And I'm all about like a big chorus, which I think is important. But I guess when I think of like the stuff that I love, because I love Limp Bizkit, I love that early Deftones stuff, and I think about the Korn stuff that I do really like, and I think it really comes down to if they can get that loud, quiet, dynamic right, you know, because we just listened to an album tonight, and it was like, oh, you guys should have gone harder,
yeah.
You know, and I feel like, really, if you want to know my template for like how it's done, I would say listen to like the first like four songs on Significant Other. Like that's like
the template. I was thinking Break Stuff is kind of the template.
Break Stuff's a great template. Nice. And I would say Be Quiet and Drive on Around the Fur, you know. But at the same time, that's it's an impossible standard because we're always talking about, like, you wish you were Chino, but you're not. And that's the thing that I think a lot of bands who don't quite have that identity, and you can call it out right away. It's like, my dude wishes he was Chino, but he doesn't have it.
All of us dudes wish we were Chino, but go ahead.
Yeah, and I wish all dudes were Chino too. So what are you going to do? Right. For me personally, what makes my favorite nu metal songs, I love it when they're super loud and they're super pissed to the point that they almost don't even make sense anymore. I just really like to feel like everything is being thrown at me at once. I don't really have much of a need for the quiet parts, but yeah, that's it. Simple as that.
Pit activators.
You got to activate a pit. Yeah. If we're through an album and we all look at each other like, has a pit even been activated? Actually, the episode we just did, we didn't talk about pits at all because it never happened. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, Matt's ratio of pit stokers to pit activators is about right. You know, it's about what, 3-1, 4-1, you know, you have.
Yeah, I think it's a 4-1. Yeah. So you got to have. For every pit activator, you can have four stokers.
Yeah.
All right, my guest this week was Fallon Bowman of Kitty. What do you guys remember from, you know, doing the Kitty episode? I know that's been a little while ago for you guys.
Oh my God, that they were so young when they recorded that record.
Yeah, that was the big surprise. We didn't, none of us realized that they were babies when they made it.
And it gave us huge context to take it easier on them because the lyrics in that record are very straight ahead, very kind of, well, they're teenage lyrics.
Right.
And once we realized that they were teenage lyrics, like you put the knives away and you're like, oh my God, at 17, I could never have done anything this good.
Yeah. And that went in the canon.
Yeah. And the album cover is such a beautiful and perfect document of that time. Just the cheetah print, the makeup, the outfits. I was just like, yep, that's what I wish I was able to dress like when I was that age.
What's funny is I love when you guys hear lately, if you have an episode coming up and I know the artist or whatever, I'll kind of throw you like, hey, I talked to this person about this album and kind of steer you in a direction if I've covered anything. And this was the first time that I was able to go to you guys for, you know, my research, because I wasn't the hugest Kitty fan back in the day. So I was like, you know what? I bet you I know who breaks down the Kitty album great. I was like, and that would be the Roach Coach podcast. So good times. Let's give the quick, how do you guys find your podcast? I mean, I know if people are listening to my podcast and they know how to find podcasts, but, you know, just for shits and giggles, you know, let's do the normal. How do they find you guys?
You can find us on iTunes, Roach Coach Podcast, Coach with a K, K-O-A-C-H. You can find us on Twitter at Roach Coach. We're on Facebook, Roach Coach on Facebook. And we're also on Stitcher. And we're not yet on Google Play, but we're working on it.
Tisk, tisk.
I know.
All right, Roach Coach. Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time today. This has been fun.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. Absolutely.
And like I say, you know, guys, podcast out each Wednesday, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I'm sure you just said that. But all right, well, make sure you guys go and check out the Roach Coach podcast, and let's check out some Kitty with Brackish, and then get into my conversation with Fallon Bowman.
I'm not afraid to die. smelling like a vein of pride to touch upon the surface is not for what it seems. I take away my problems, but only I dream. What's really from inside you makes me feel no way to guide you. Here's your fucking chance to be young, be strong. Take so much away from inside you makes me feel no way to guide you. Here's your fucking chance to be young.
Fallon Bowman, how are you tonight?
I'm very, very good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, this podcast being what it is, you know, the kitty ladies have been somebody I've always wanted on the show. And looking kind of at Kitty, even though you were only on the first album, but you did like a lot of the major, you know, first videos and Ozfest, things like that. I mean, are you still kind of maybe still recognized as being a kitty, or are people still like, aren't you in Kitty, or do you still get that now?
Not anymore. No, it stopped happening after maybe 2002. And then, yeah, I just kind of dropped off the radar. So people just forgot about me kind of, which is fine. So basically, yeah, around 2002, I think people just stopped. I mean, it happened once at LAX. That somebody came up to me and my boyfriend at the time and was like, "Hey, are you blah blah blah?" And you know, my boyfriend knew who I was and stuff, but he was like, "That was really awkward. I don't ever want that to happen again." Like, yeah, well, but no, not anymore.
Well, that's funny. But looking at the YouTube comments, things like that, I was just kind of going over some videos and stuff, and even to this day, like, it seems like the overwhelming, like, Fallon was my favorite and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of funny that you were only in that band for, well, you were in the band for 5 years or so, but I mean, only in the signed version for you know, an album.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
You left a lasting impression, I guess, on a lot of young men.
I hope so. And you know, that it's funny. I was telling Talina recently, I'm like, my fans are not anything near as fanatical as yours are. And you were like, she was in it slightly longer than I was, but not like, I was in it longer than she was, but she was in the sign part longer than I was. And like, hers are crazy fanatical. Like,
really?
She's like, it's crazy, man. I don't even do music anymore. Like, why are they? I'm like, I don't know, man. That's just the way it goes. But yeah, like, the people that have stuck with me, are amazing. The most amazing fans that anybody could ask for, really.
That's crazy. Does she have like Facebook pages dedicated to her kind of psycho stuff, or?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. She has more impersonators, I think, than I don't even know. Like, people pretend to be Kitty era Talina, and they all talk to each other as if they're like, it's like a group of people. And when I told her about it, she thought I was lying. I'm like, nope. No, I creeped it. I went through everything they were talking about. They were talking as if they were you. She's like, okay, well, they can have me, I guess. Have fun.
That's amazing.
Role playing Talina Atfield. Yeah.
Did you guys ever have any issues back in the day with, like, you know, just the creepy dudes back in the, you know, early 2000s?
I had one that would send a letter to Artemis Records every single day for 2 years. Every day. Every day they would get one from him. In fact, I think I still have some of them, because I'm weird weird like that. I keep these things.
No, I totally would have kept that.
Yeah. Just one. And he was legitimately scary. And every time we would go to wherever he lived, we would make sure that, you know, we kept an eye in case. Because you just never know, right? These some, you know, you've heard horror stories of this kind of thing happen where people, you know, have all sorts of strange plans in their head and whatever. So,
right. I mean, yeah, all the way up until leading, all the way up and including, was it the girl that was on like The Voice or American Idol just a few years ago? She was very young, and yeah, the autograph signing or whatever, dude just flat out just killed her.
Yeah. That was, I think she was a YouTube star or something like that, a YouTube person, personality.
Yeah.
That's or was that? Yeah. Anyway, and that was super fucked up. Super fucked up.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be some scary stuff. So let's go back to the Wayback Machine. How's the memory these days since you're an old lady?
not very good, to be honest, but right. Okay, we'll try.
We'll try. All right, well, I mean, that's so crazy looking back at Kitty, and even in the last couple of days, just really wrapping my head around how old you guys were at the time. I mean, you were the youngest, correct?
No, Mercedes was. Not by much, though.
So in 96, when the band formed, how old were you?
Oh my God. You're making me do math now. I think I was like, what, 13?
Jesus.
13 or 14. Yeah, maybe younger. I met Mercedes when I was 12 or 13. But yeah, we were really, really, really young. And now my sister my niece is 16 now. But I would think of myself as her at 16. Like, we had totally different lives. Like, you know, right. it's absolutely mind boggling for me to think about it.
Well, too, my daughter's about to turn 15. So I'm kind of like looking at it through the scope of also being a dad, but then also kind of, you know, I was in bands when I was 14 and 15, but obviously we weren't doing anything kiddie, you know, on the kiddie level. But but so like trying to look at it through all these different lenses. And so how long were you playing guitar before Kitty formed?
Not very long, to be honest.
Or was it just kind of like, hey, let's start a band, let's call it Kitty, I'll play guitar?
No, it wasn't. It was more so like I was just learning to play as I went, really. Like I didn't take lessons or anything. Like I was I did a YouTube video today. I filmed one and I was talking about like playing guitar and stuff like that. I taught myself how to do guitar tab and learn guitar tab because there was no internet at that time. Like, I didn't have internet in my house. So I had to buy Guitar World and figure out what the fuck guitar tab was. I'm like, okay, what is this? So there's a bunch of lines and there's letter or numbers and like, okay, let's figure this out. So I was basically just learning as I went. And a lot of the songs were so simple because of the fact that we hadn't been playing for like 20 years or anything. It had only been like maybe 2 or 3 years. So like I started playing when I was 11 and we got signed when we were like 14 or 15. So not that much time.
That's insane. Looking back, I mean, kids these days, and I don't want to sound like the old guy pushing 40, but you know, kids these days with their YouTube instructional videos where I actually recently did a few podcasters got together and, you know, I play bass, they play drums, guitar, blah, blah, blah. And we did a cover of Deftones Elite. And and I was like, man, I haven't learned or recorded or done anything in like 10 years. So I had to like learn Elite and my ears shot. So I'm like, so I went on YouTube and watched some kid play Elite. And I'm like, okay, I got it. So
it's funny. It really is because there's, I don't know how, you know, sometimes when you fall down the Wikipedia rabbit hole and then there's the YouTube rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I fell down the YouTube one. And came across this girl that she can't be any older than 13, maybe 12 or 13, but the girl is a fucking prodigy. Like, it's crazy how good she is. Yeah. And like, my mind was absolutely blown. Like, I was definitely, and I'm still not as good as this girl is. Like, she was playing Dragon Force, like, no problem. Like, all over the place.
Yeah, I think I know, I think I know the girl you're talking about. I think there's a video of her doing some, like Avenged Sevenfold or something, and just, all these kids are out there just like blowing everybody away. When I was 13 and 14, yeah. I was excited that I could play For Whom the Bell Tolls or something.
Me too. Yeah, that's the reality, I guess, right?
Right, exactly. But also, yeah. I mean, you know, there was always, you know, there was always like one or two kids around the neighborhood or in high school or something that could, you know, play very well. So basically you're getting the cream of the crop, yeah, with watching these YouTube videos too. So I don't know. But they also weren't.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So the band forms, you know, Wikipedia says you formed after meeting in gym class, which I think is funny.
Yep.
Just trying to picture you guys, mm-hmm, like in, you know, your little gym uniforms or something. Like, let's start a band. But
that was misconstrued because it's actually, we was in a gymnastics class.
Oh.
Like, her and I were both gymnasts, and because I've been training for like up in like like 6 or 7 years because I wanted to start being a competitive gymnast at this point. And I see this girl. Let me just close this window because it's like bang bang into my ear. Okay. I see this girl who's like really, really tall, and that's unusual in gymnastics, as you know. And this like long, beautiful red hair, and I'm like, okay, wow, okay, she stands out.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I ended up meeting her through a really weird, like, we had mutual friends, and I'm like, oh, you're the girl that I saw in my class. And she wasn't even in my class; she was in another like level of class, but we. So we didn't really meet in that class. We encountered each other, and then we met through a mutual friend afterwards.
So I was listening to you on John's Untitled podcast. Kind of,
yeah, good guy. I like him.
Yeah, he's a good solid dude. Actually, I'm the guest this week on his show, if you listen. So that's kind of funny.
right on.
But so you were talking with him about your dad was a musician or a performer, and so, yep, he. How influential was he, and then how much did he embrace you like doing band stuff?
I could never see any of his movies because they were all like not kids movies at all. So they're really kind of artsy, dark stuff. So I could never see them even as a young teenager. So I still haven't because I refuse to watch his movies. I'm like, nope, can't do it. Nope. So in terms of him being influential in that sense, not really, because okay. I've never seen him. Unfortunately, I've never seen him perform. So at any rate, at first he was not too supportive of me being like a crazy obsessed musician and like would cut out these ads from like the Penny Saver that we have here. And like people selling their drums or people selling their guitars. And I'm like 11 years old at this point, and I keep sticking them all over the refrigerator. I'm like, dad, look, dad, look. And he's like, I'm not buying you a drum set. Just stop. I'm not going to. I'm like, how about a guitar? A guitar? How's a guitar? Like, come on. So then finally he saw me perform for my grade eight concert or whatever. I played Violet by Hole in front of everybody, and I borrowed a friend's guitar, and he's like, I didn't know you could play. I'm like, dad, have you not been listening to me playing on a nylon string guitar in my room for the past year and a half? Like, really, where are my dad was really busy with like work and stuff, so he never knew that I was like so dedicated to my craft at the time. So then he's like, okay, I'll buy you one. Don't worry.
That's amazing.
So he was a little bit hesitant at first, but then he saw how passionate and how dedicated I was, I think. And he was like, okay, all right, I give you my blessing.
So the dad in me, you know, my daughter, she'll be 15. By the time this is out, she'll be 15. And...
oh, happy birthday.
Right. yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy seeing that, you know, seeing her at 15, but that's beside the point. But just trying to picture me allowing her to, not necessarily, you know, if she wanted to be in a band, I mean, that'd be awesome. I would totally support that. But actually, you know, I'll skip ahead a little bit, but actually allowing her to go on tour, I just knowing what I know from touring, I would never allow that.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of parents would, but like my parents were there most of the time, or not most of the time, but like they would make their presence known, and they knew what kind of kid I was, and they knew that, you know, I had a pretty solid head on my shoulders, and they knew that I wouldn't get
wrapped up in the lifestyle, because it was definitely, I'm not going to lie, it was definitely there, like everything that you probably shouldn't have around your teenage daughter was there. Like all of it. So it was just a matter of having a solid ground beneath you and not getting sucked up into it, because you see people get sucked up into it and you're like, wow, okay. But you know, I was, from most of the time that we were touring, I was straight edge and vegan. So I was like, didn't care about any, I just wanted to go be on the bus and sleep. That's all I cared about. I think I'm probably worse now than I was then. So,
right.
At any rate, they of course saw some of those things firsthand, and they knew that it was there, but they knew that they trusted me that I wouldn't be, you know, caught up in that. And also because we had Morgan Mercedes' parents with us, that was, you know, and they were excellent with like making sure that we were keeping on track and not like, you know, being partying a lot and stuff like that. So they were really, really good. So my parents trusted them.
This is totally just popped in my head, but any money that you made at that point, were you able to touch that money, or were they putting that away, putting that aside?
Most of the time, I don't know if it's changed now, but most of the time, if you're under 18, it has to be like put into like a trust and stuff like that. And that works with anybody that's under 18 that can't sign for themselves. So, yeah.
So basically, after you left Kitty is when you actually got to see any kind of money that you made from Kitty?
Well, there wasn't really much, so there wasn't really a lot to speak of. It was enough to get me through to university, and then, yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's good, though. Yeah, that's always good.
Yeah. And it's no, and I mean, that's a perfect investment, so I'm good with that.
Very cool. So kind of heading back, I mean, so the band forms, you're playing for a couple of years. What was it that got you guys to Artemis Records?
We had a guy named Jason Weiner who came to one of our showcases in Canada, in Toronto. And he had shown, I can't remember exactly how, but he had shown interest in us after we had sent him a demo tape to New York. He came up to Toronto. He came to see us at our showcase and was like, oh my God, like, you know, we really wanted to be with a smaller, indie label at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, because all the bigger labels were like, nope, nope, nope. They all passed on us. And they were the only ones, like they were this tiny, not tiny, but like kind of a boutique style record label, NG Records. They had Orange 9mm. They had Lower East Side Stitches, like these kind of mid-level indie bands that we all were like, oh, this is great. This is the perfect like amount of attention that we need at this moment. And right when we got signed, there was a merger between NG and Artemis. So NG was no more, but they were absorbed into Artemis Records, which is owned by Danny Goldberg, who, as you know, was sort of instrumental in signing Nirvana and stuff like that. So that's how we kind of got sucked into that. And that wasn't really Artemis didn't exist at the time when we were signed. So it was kind of formed afterwards, as far as I remember.
So what was the initial push with you guys? I know that, I mean, obviously I was there for, you know, that was the peak of my, you know, youth, you know, 19, 20, when you guys started popping up. But I mean, I guess what was the original plan for you guys, you know, go in and were they touting, you know, Ozfests and things like that when you guys first went in, or were you guys looking at something smaller? What was going on there?
Yeah, our first tour was like really, really small. It was, well, not really small, but it was with Skin Lab. I don't even know if they're still going, but I think they probably are.
Actually, they just announced a 20-year reunion tour.
So. Oh, fantastic.
I love Steve. Well, actually, yeah. When I was in Primer 55, we toured with those guys. They were, and still Steve is probably one of my favorite dudes ever.
He seemed like a real, like, he had a real presence to him, that's for sure.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, being a tiny, I'm like 5'1" and he's like a huge guy. So I was like, okay. At any rate. So that was, did like that tour with Pissing Razors as well. We couldn't have been any different than them in terms of like looks. We were like night and day, but in a good way, I think. And they were really, really, really great with us and whatnot. So that was a nice first tour to do. And it was like, you know, in between school, and it was during the school break. So, in terms of it being, you know, we were still an NG at the time. So Artemis, again, didn't exist at this point. So we were just kind of doing small tours, and that was perfectly fine for us. And then it just kind of escalated from there once we were sort of absorbed into the Artemis Records realm.
So you got... Yeah, I hate to even ask this question because it's such a male-female question, but I mean, were they pushing you guys to look a certain way, or was that just, you know, you guys being teenage girls and wanting to look kind of a little outlandish?
We were really hardcore influenced by, like, glam at the time. So we were doing, like, right when we started anyways, we were doing, like, trying to do lots of feathers and crazy glam rocky kind of deal. I don't know why. To be honest with you, I can't remember exactly why. I think it's because we were hanging out with a lot of glam bands. Because I don't know why, there was quite a few glam rock bands that were coming out in Toronto at the time. So we were hanging out with all of them, and they had a very 90s glam rock style. And I think that's where we're sort of molding ourselves onto. But we were playing metal, so it was really strange. But anyways, no, they had absolutely nothing to do with that. That was just the way we were. And then as you see, like, from the beginning of January, from the beginning of 2000, like, to Ozzfest, you can see a really stark difference in how we looked. We kind of changed completely. No more glam rock look. And we just were like kind of the, what I call the new metal uniform. It's like Dickies pants, Adidas, a sweater, and like a visor hat, mm-hmm. or a hat of some kind, and everybody wore that. So
yeah, it was funny watching some old videos, and you looked like every girl I dated in high school, or, you know, at some point, because, you know, they all wore, you know, the big baggy JNCO pants with like a tight wife beater or, you know, something on. So it was funny.
You got it. And we make fun of ourselves now, like, yeah, my friends and I, because we legitimately always wore stuff like that. Like, I was, you know, but yeah, we kind of adopted that look after a while. But at the beginning, yeah, it was like super hardcore glam rock, which is strange, but yeah.
So,
and then our record label was like, oh, okay. All right. So you're okay. That's fine. You do whatever. That's good.
So this is all over the place already, but, you know, just kind of looking back on all this stuff, I mean, do you ever, you know, put in the first album and listen to it, and, you know, is it cringeworthy to you? Are you proud of it? Or you look back on it and, like you said, laugh? I mean, what do you think about the first Kitty album?
I look back on it fondly, sure. But no, I don't ever put it on, ever. People put it on sometimes to embarrass me, but it doesn't embarrass me. It's like, no, it was a part of my life, and I'm going to always accept that there were good things about it. And so, no, I'm like, those, nice try, guys. But
yeah. You know, talking earlier, just kind of going into the, you know, the new metal era and things like that, I still have people, you know, send me photos or, you know, kind of there, because there was a moment, it's not so bad now, but there was a moment in the early to, or I guess the mid to late 2000s, you know, that if you were associated with the new metal era, it was still kind of a frowned upon. But I think we're moving into that level now to where, you know, it's almost respected or something. It's a really weird time.
Really?
It is.
It is. Which is great. I think that people forget how, like, I don't forget how influential it was on me, because I was still a consumer of that kind of music at that time, keeping that in mind. Like, I was my own audience, if that makes any sense.
No, I'm 100% with you. So, on that.
Yeah, like, because it was, I love that music. It always holds a very special place in my heart, because I was, like, developing into an adult at the time. Right, that was, it formed me in a lot of ways. So, I think it's great. More power to new metal resurgence. I'm good with that.
No, it's funny because we talk about on, you know, with the podcast and stuff, and a lot of the other podcasters that I deal with, the fact that I was in Primer 55, which I you know, I was only in it for a minute. I was like third bass player. You know what I'm saying? It's not something
that's not something you
can really write home about. But you know, I still toured. I still did I did the last major tour they ever did, and then I did some. You know, they kind of did a reunion thing in 07, which I was a part of, things like that. So it's like, you know, I was out there and did it. So, but to me, it's not that big of a deal. I think it's kind of funny. And the other podcaster's like, dude, you were in a touring band. Not a lot of people get to that level. And I'm like, well, I guess you're right.
That is true.
So it's kind of funny how, in retrospect, it's kind of respectable. But I guess that and $1.50 gets me a cup of coffee, right?
You're all right. Yeah, I like that. It's interesting. I don't, people get kind of annoyed with me that I don't tell them that I have this like past.
Right.
And recently I lived in Denmark actually for half a year or so. And I did this, cause I act as well. So I did a theater production with this English guy, and he comes up to me afterwards. He's like, why the fuck didn't you tell me that you used to be in a band? I'm like, so do you really think that the first thing that I'm going to tell you, meeting you, I don't know you, like, just so you know, I was in a band before. Just so you know, like, it's not going to come up in conversation, and I'm not going to like come out and tell you those. It's just, that's,
you're not going to hit it with the, do you know who I am? I was
never, ever, forever. And I will only say it as a joke. I will never be like the type of person that's like, oh, I did this and then never. And so he was actually kind of annoyed with me. He's like, why wouldn't you tell me? That's such a great accomplishment. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I guess it kind of is. I don't know. So I'm kind of like you in the sense that, like, it's not really a huge deal, but like to some people, it really is. So,
no, I totally understand that.
Yeah, you get me.
Hey, we get each other.
But we get each other.
Are we best friends now?
Yeah, I think we are. The connection was just made.
Very cool. Well, let's kind of go back to some of the touring and stuff you did in 2000, kind of supporting the album. You know, you did some pretty major touring, and once again, just kind of going back to just being so young, it just like, it blows me away. Like, how did you handle all that? Because I think at 15, I probably thought I was ready to tour, but looking back, I was like, there's no way I would have been ready for that.
I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea. Like, we didn't have a break until September 2000. That was 9 months straight. So that is a considerable amount of time. And I think that has had such a profound effect on me now as like an adult that I'm perfectly okay never having a home. Like I don't have a home. I'm cool with just living out of boxes and living out of suitcases. It's like, I only toured for a very short time in my life, but it has affected me for the rest of my life. So, yeah, it's now that I think back on it, it's absolutely insane that we toured for 9 months straight almost. So,
yeah. And you did some crazy stuff, you know, like I said, I saw you guys with Mudvayne, you know, you get the Ozfest 2000, you know, Skin Lab tours in there. The, looks like you did a tour with
Slipknot.
Slipknot. Yeah. Jesus. And Slipknot in that was what, 2000 when you toured with Slipknot?
January 2000 was right when they released their first record, actually.
And they like, I talk about this show a lot on this podcast, but I saw them open for Cold Chamber and Machine Head. So Cold Chamber, yeah, they're opening.
Yes.
So Cold Chamber is on, you know, Dez is like a few months away from forming Devil Driver. So Cold Chamber is almost done. Machine Head's touring The Burning Red, which everyone hated at the time, which I loved still, but whatever. And then Slipknot's the opening band, and it's at the New Daisy in Memphis. So I'm sure you're familiar with that club. But you know, Cold Chamber is backlined, Machine Head is backlined, and all nine of Slipknot are just on the front of the stage about to fall off. And
oh my God,
it's a sold out show. And I swear to you, after Slipknot played, place emptied out. Like, it was crazy to watch everybody leave. And I always say it was like, you know, just the changing of the guard or something. That's
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, 2000. Go ahead.
2000. Yeah, it would have been, when was that? Sorry.
Amen was on that tour too, so I'm not sure what year that would have been, but that was probably late 99, if not around the time.
Yeah, it would have been right before their first headlining, because I know that the record had just come out, because a friend of mine gave me their tape. Nice. with what is the name of that song called that they had to take off their record? It was the they were getting sued for it because it was based on some case that this girl was kept in a box underneath this guy's bed or something like that. Anyway, so they had to actually remove that song off of that first printing of their record. And so she gave me the tape with that song on it. And I'm like, oh, it's just a great song. I hope they play it. And they never played it. I'm like, why didn't you play it? Ah! So anyway, so that was right when they were releasing that record, which is probably one of my favorites of all time. So good.
So Wikipedia tells me that it was the Livin' La Vida Loco tour. Headlined by Colt Chamber, and it would have been late 99. So yeah, so
99. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because we started that tour in January.
September 6th, 1999. So yeah, the Livin' La Vida Loco tour. Jesus.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So those shows had to just been amazing, like just to watch them at that time, because I mean at that time nobody knew what they looked like, nobody knew what was going on. It was such a crazy thing. And one of the best reviews I ever saw of that first album was the very first line said, "Now this is an Insane Clown Posse."
I have to admit, when my friend gave me the tape of this record, I didn't like it at first. I'm like, I don't like it. I don't know what it is. I don't like it. And I listened. I'm like, I'm going to be touring with these guys. I better actually kind of like their music. Just saying. But when I saw them live, I was so my mind was absolutely blown by how fucking awesome they were. They were amazing every single night. And there were times when they brought me to tears. They were so good. Like, just, oh, I was being, as I said, being a consumer about, you know, for this kind of music, I was absolutely sold. I'm like, this is a show. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter what venue they were in. If they were in this shitty, tiny venue, there were a couple of times where we played, like there were three bands. There was Will Haven also on that tour, who are also fucking incredible. And then us. And so all their stuff took up all the space, but we had this really tiny stage one time. And again, they kind of had to stay like your show, like in the very front, even though they had like, you know, they were headlining the show, but they were still amazing. Like I pretty much would watch their show every single night and be like, I'm pinching myself right now. I can't believe I'm here.
Yeah, it was an amazing time period for music, and that's why I think I like doing this podcast so much, kind of focusing on that era, because, you know, it did kind of go through a weird hazing era. You know, I guess, you know, like when we were young, I mean, like you said, the 90s, talking about the hair metal bands hanging around, you know, at that time it was still kind of cliche for the hair metal guys, but they're now bigger than ever, so it's crazy. So here comes the new metal resurgence.
Yeah, fuck you guys.
Yeah. We're coming back.
So, we're coming back with a vengeance.
So how was that Ozfest that year for you?
It was like a touring high school circus, because we were the youngest on the tour with a band like there was one night, I remember, or not one night, we played at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But there was one time where I looked to my right, and Dimebag Darrell is standing there watching.
Oh, wow.
And he is one of my idols, or he was one of my idols. Like, I couldn't play after that. Like, we still had 5 or 10 minutes left in our set, and I'm like, I'm done. I can't play anymore. He's here. Like, and all he does is he takes a swig of his whatever he was drinking. He's like, "Now you little lady, you can play." I was like, "Thank you, sir." It was just a lot of us, or me, quietly fangirling, being around all of these amazing, amazing musicians. Like, just, yeah. So it was a fantastic experience, absolutely, from beginning to end.
So with the old dudes in other bands running around, I mean, did you guys get much backlash? I know kind of in the underground, let's see, how do I word this properly? I know with unsigned dudes that were probably jealous of you guys, there was some backlash, but how was it from dudes that were already established?
It's kind of amazing. You know, if there was any sort of, how do I say this? If there was any sort of like disrespect on their part, they would generally keep it to themselves if that was the case. But I would say 95% of the time they were not like that. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that we were also very young girls, and you know, they wouldn't, I think it would have been different if we would have been 25 or something like that. There would have been more blatant, you know, sexism and whatnot. But of course there was probably a lot of subtle sexism going on that of course I wasn't very in tune to as a 16-year-old kid. But there were some times where I was like, okay, you're a fucking asshole many times, but, yeah, that did happen, but, I won't name names, but yeah. Yeah. So generally everybody was quite respectful, which is, we're very fortunate that's the case, but, unsigned guys. Oh yeah. All the time. People that I knew for years would be like, oh, well, the only reason why you're signed is because you're girls. And da, 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 da. Like they would say shit like that to my face. And I'm like, are we really having this conversation right now? Like, is your ego and your masculinity so hurt that, you know, anyway, whatever. And he added me on Facebook, that guy. And I'm like, fuck you. This was 20 years ago, but I don't care. I'm not going to be your Facebook friend.
Delete. No, I hold grudges the same. There's still people that 20 years ago that looked at me the wrong way, and I'm like, fuck that guy.
yeah, can't get over it. I'm a Scorpio. Just want to kill everybody.
Well, I'm a Cancer, so yeah, I hold grudges too. It's funny, those little, like, you see it on Facebook, you'll see, like, you know, how long signs keep grudges, and it's like some people say, like, a day, and Cancer always says lifetime.
Yeah, lifetime, and same with Scorpio. So that's just what we do, right? That's crabby. Mm-hmm. We have pinchers. We, you know. So anyway,
we can go real spacey there. You know, with the Cancer, with the crab, with the hard exterior shell, but it's soft on the inside.
Man, and your solar plexus shit.
And I'm the worst too, because not only am I my Cancer, but my first like three, my first moon and like my first three planets were all in Cancer also. So I'm like a Cancer across the board.
You're a super Cancer. So, yeah. I am not a super Scorpio. I am a Scorpio Aries. So.
Oh geez, I don't think I've ever gotten this spacey on the podcast. And I think I'll reel it back.
Yeah,
in.
Well, I was gonna tell you that sometimes that does happen. I did another interview with someone too, where we got like super, super, super philosophical, nothing to do with music whatsoever. And he's like, I'm going to have to cut everything that we just talked about because it has nothing to do with music. I'm like, yeah, it's people talk to me. They just get philosophical, man. What can I say?
No, it's all good. So we'll just revert it back to music. So after Ozfest, you do the Mudvayne tour, which I saw you guys on. Another band at the time, you know, you kind of caught Slipknot when they were breaking. Ozfest that year was amazing, and then, you know, Mudvayne's also breaking at the same time. And how were those guys with you?
I was a huge Mudvayne fan. Mudvayne, it's their like side project, right? Mudvayne. Huge fan of theirs prior to being on that tour. And that was, what tour was it, just them or was it Snowcore? I can't remember.
Looking at the date, it didn't say what tour it was, but it said like, I think Factory 81 was on that tour, and who else was on there? Somebody else in that.
I can't remember. But yeah, I remember it. Was it? Yeah, it was Factory 81 and someone else, and then Mudvayne and us. Anyway. Yeah, I was like fangirling the entire time. I'm like, oh, fuck, this is so awesome. Because they were also like bang on every single night. And, you know, yeah, I really dug them.
Yeah, it was fun. If I remember correctly, it was a fun show. I mean, it's also been, you know, 20 years ago. So, but,
yeah.
you know, and that was back when I was going to every show every night. So you go from that, and then when did you leave Kitty?
I left in I think May of 2001 or something like that. I can't exactly remember. It was kind of everything like after Snowcore is like a blur up until 2002. I legitimately don't remember anything. It was like I had like crazy blocking out of memory, bad memory, just gone. Strange. Yeah. So I think it was May.
Did what did you do after the Mudvayne tour? Did you go?
We were supposed to go on tour with Pantera.
I did read that. Now, actually, I need to hear that story.
And we, of course, I think all of us collectively fangirled in our like rehearsal space, like literally jumping up and down, like, oh my fucking God. Because Reinventing the Steel is my favorite record of all time, which is, for some Pantera fans, kind of blasphemy. But I love it. I think it's one of the best, in my opinion. So it would have been to support that record. And then we get a call like, nope, we're not doing the tour anymore. Phil, something's happened to Phil. He had some liver or something or other. And, you know, then they didn't go on the tour. And I think they were done after that. Like, no more.
Yeah, I would have think that would have probably been that probably would have been the last Pantera tour.
Yep.
Because I think I saw him in 2000. The last time I saw him was in like late 2000. So I think they played their last show in 2001. The internet says that Apartment 26 was also on that tour with you.
Apartment 26, that's the name. I was like, another number was in there somewhere. It was like, yeah, Apartment 26.
That was, you know, you guys should have been like Kitty 42 or something. But
yeah, we should have added a number.
Maybe we should do that. So you leave in 2001. What was the main epiphany that kind of made you leave the band? I know I've heard... you know, musical differences where you wanted to go a little bit more industrial and they wanted to go a little bit more this way. And, you know, was that the case?
Yeah, that was pretty much what it boiled down to, was that we were just in different places musically. And so it made writing the second record really awkward because I'm like, well, why don't we do something like this or, you know, change it up? And, you know, we just couldn't decide on, and the fit just wasn't the same anymore because the dynamics were different because we weren't doing this now as four teenagers in a basement. It was now something different, which I was not really prepared to be behind anymore. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm leaving. And, you know, they're like, okay. So, yeah, that's basically it.
So looking back, do you see it as a kind of a rash teenager decision or do you see it as like the proper decision at the time?
Absolutely 100% proper decision at the time.
Okay. Yeah, I was just trying to trying to place that. And then I've seen some like solo stuff. What was the one solo thing you did? The
Amphibious Assault.
Yeah, Amphibious Assault. I listened to some of that today. You know, your career since you know you left Kitty, you know, some solo stuff, the Amphibious Assault stuff, you know, you go to college, you have your degree in what, archaeology?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yep.
But so basically Kitty pays for your college to do archaeology, is that what we're getting at?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then
like travel, because like I said, I can't stay in one place for too long. I get itchy and then I need to leave.
So what do you do with the archaeology degree? Do you dig up stuff? Is that the kind of that's what I think when I think archaeology. Is that what you do?
Yeah, at least you didn't say dinosaurs, because most people are like, oh, you dig up dinosaurs. I'm like, no, archaeologist.
I mean, if you find a dinosaur, it would be kind of cool.
Which would be great, but then I would call up a paleontologist who would know better what to do, because that's what they do. But at any rate, I am I guess you could call me a Roman archaeologist, so I work in Italy mostly. That was what my research dealt with, because I ended up writing my thesis on stuff like that, and now I'm trying to get into a PhD and stuff like that. So I'm trying to go the academic route in life because I like research and I like reading and I like writing papers that probably no one will ever read, but I'm cool with that. And teaching and stuff like that, because teaching is much like, you know, teaching to a bunch of bored university students is kind of exciting for me, I guess. It's kind of like performing because you need to make the material come alive, so otherwise they're gonna be watching porn in your class. Like, that's happened to me before.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, I was like, what are you doing back there, like, for real?
So, yeah.
So you truly caught somebody watching porn in your class?
Well, I don't, I kind of saw it from the side. To me, it looked a little suspect. So I'm like, what I said was, you're distracting the people behind you by watching videos. Could you please not? But to me, it looked like porn. Like, legitimately, guy sitting there, not even paying attention, watching porn in my class. So, yeah.
Wow.
I can't prove it. Can't prove it, but...
So how did you get involved with Pig Face?
How was that, actually? Through Jason Miller, okay. Who was in Godhead.
All right.
And him and I really hit it off. I don't know. I think I met him at a show somewhere, and like, we were both like huge nerds. And so we got into, you know, conversation about Lord of the Rings. He's a big Lord of the Rings fan too, like me. So anyway, so we started chatting, and he had mentioned, he's like, yeah, a buddy of mine, or a friend of mine, his name's Martin. He has this band that they're looking for, like, you know, singers and whatever. I told him about you, and he's really interested. He wants to meet with you and whatever. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I don't think I realized at the time just how influential Martin Atkins is in the Chicago industrial scene. Like, not at all. I had no idea. And so then I flew down and, like, got to sing the song and got to play with him. And then realizing, like, afterwards, like, this guy played with John Lydon. Like, that's amazing. Like, he's right? Like, this is incredible. And then recently I did the 25th anniversary show with them, even though I was only on, I never went on their Pig Face United tour in 2003. But he invited me anyways, and it was amazing. Like, I got to play with, you know, people that I fangirl over, like, inside. Of course, I don't do it in front of them, but I'm like, I love you so much. Anyway, yeah, so I kind of got involved through Jason. He was really the connection there.
How often do you kind of get the reverse of that, where you think you're fangirling, or you fangirling on the inside, but then the person you're talking to is like, oh my God, when I was in high school, like, Kitty was my jam.
I actually, one of the guys that was helping out with the Pig Face show told me, he's like, I don't want to weird you out, but I had a picture of you on my wall when I was a teenager. I'm like, that doesn't weird me out. That's actually kind of awesome. But yeah. So it does happen sometimes, but it's never, well, I can say it's never happened, but like, people that I idolize and like love to pieces, sometimes they're like, man, like, I dug your stuff. I listened to it and whatever. And I'm like, no, you didn't. You didn't listen to it. You don't love it. You're just telling me that. Like, I can't bring myself to believe that someone that I, like, you know, I idolize. For example, like Jonah Matranga from Far. Mm-hmm. Far is one of my favorite bands of all time. Great band. And him and I just became Facebook friends. And every time he comes up on my timeline, I'm like, so exciting. And I don't think he realizes how much I love him. Just kind of awkward, but yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, there's a few dudes that I've had on the podcast that I've become Facebook friends with, and I'll post a picture. Oh. You know, I'll post a picture of you know, my I have a 2-year-old also. I have kids all over the place, but I'll post a picture of him. You know, I was like, yeah, look at my little guy. And then, you know, you get that weird like from, you know, like the, from like the bass player from Downset or something will like it. I'm like,
I know. And you do the little fangirl. You can't help it. It's like, these people have had a part in shaping who you are as like a person or whatever. Right. And so that's super, super cool that you have that Facebook is a thing that kind of relationship can be facilitated. So
yeah. Who would have thought? I would have killed to have social media in like the 90s, but
Could you imagine?
Right.
We did have bulletin boards and forums.
Yeah, we did, and we had.
Did you not? You utilize any of that? Like, when we first started, we had the Kitty forum, which was like a thing up until like 2006 or something. It's like one of the longest running forums ever. But anyways. And it was like it was called a guest book.
We had a guest book. The band that I was in the late 90s, early 2000s, we had a guest book that actually a friend of mine sent me a link to that it's still up. And going through it, it was funny. There was it was like everybody from that time, it was the band 10 Years had written on there. It was like, hey, we're in this little new band called 10 Years. We'd like to trade shows. And then Jose Mangan's on there, and like Chris Kale from Five Finger Death Punch is on there. And like, it's all this like crazy crap from, you know, it's like a relic. It's like archaeology. It's, you know, it's internet archaeology.
Exactly. It's digital archaeology, baby. That's what it is.
Because it changes.
And I guess that was sort of the way that was like the beginnings of how these sorts of social media connections happen. Because that's exactly what our Facebook or our guest book was like, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was bands seeking us out, being like, hey, do you want to play a show? Like, I like your stuff. And like, it was just about community and like sort of supporting other indie artists from locally as well as, you know, 2 hours away or something like that. Which I always thought was so cool. Like that was, we were so forward. Like this was in 97 or something, 97, 98. Like that's pretty awesome.
Well, I graduated high school in 97 and I took a friend of mine had an AOL Instant Messenger account and he let me use it. I didn't have AOL at the time, but he let me use it. And what I did was I would go in and search other people's profiles and you could do an advanced search for like city and then you could put like interests. So I booked an entire 2-week tour I would put in a city like Akron, Ohio, and then put in Corn. And then, you know, you would get a bunch of people pop up and if they were online, I would click on it and I'd be like, hey, are you in a band or do you know anybody in a band? And they don't, you know, most of the time they would.
Hey, that's really smart.
Hey, I was ahead of my
time. You were ahead of your time there, buddy.
So yeah, so I somehow finagled AOL Instant Messenger 20 years ago and got a 2-week tour out of it.
Yes. Do you remember what your SN name was? Your SN was?
Well, it was his and his his.
Well, what was his? Rather?
His screen name was. It's so for the time, but it was I could spell it and then I'll say it, but it was DEPHONKEY3 Defunky.
That's the best. So, oh man!
I think we were.
Yeah, that's.
That was total high school. You know, we probably had a band at some point. We're going to call it that, you know, or something. But
oh my God, that is the greatest. Can you call this episode that? Defunky Fallon or something like that. Yeah.
I'll put it in show notes. But the internet was a fun, crazy adventure back then. We were actually joking about, there's the show called The Classic Metal Show. It's kind of a bigger deal or whatever, but I was joking with them. They started like 21 years ago and I found a, you know, like a 1960s computer, you know, guy working on a 1960s computer. I'm like, hey, this is probably what it looked like when you guys started your internet show. And he's like, it's not far off. He's like, it's not far off, man. When we started, he said the main host used to use a web TV for his internet. I was like, wow.
Oh wow, that's a bastard pass. That's amazing.
Yeah, I gotta love web TV. So
gotta love it. Yeah, and like, you know, our thing was also Corn Palace too.
Yeah.
Corn Palace was what we would do on Friday nights is hang out on Corn Palace. Yeah. What was your screen name back then?
I'm sure it was, and please tell me it was like uppercase letter, lowercase letter, uppercase letter, lowercase letter.
You fucking bet it was, buddy. It sure was. It was like, Jesus. I think I was Chino's girl or something like that. I have a really, really horrible obsession with Chino Marino.
You and every single girl from that time period.
Oh my God.
And a lot of dudes too.
I know. I'm like, I'm married, but I would divorce my husband for him. Anyway, I think it was Chino's girl or something like that. Something G-U-R-L. Like that. Yeah, it was G-U-R-L. But I didn't actually have Corn Palace because my computer had Windows 3.1 or something. So it couldn't actually run. It couldn't run the program. So I had to go to a friend's house. And hers was Twist Chick because she loved Korn? That song. She loved Korn, loved them. So it was Twist Chick. And so I would sometimes go under her name and there was Dread Fag was my other friend, and like okay, what's really funny is that the people that we met in that chat room, we're still friends with today. Like, we bonded over a collective love of Korn. So it's kind of sad.
Yeah. But, you know. That was like back in the days of like when the Pimp Rock Palace was big and things like that. That's where you got like,
Pimp Rock Palace.
Which is actually still going, but it goes by the PRP now. But it's, I was like, yeah. So the PRP.com is still there, and they actually run a lot of crap from my show, but it's kind of funny that I'm like, yeah, the Pimp Rock Palace. So.
Oh. It's the PRP now?
Yeah. It's been the PRP for a while, but I think he took the Pimp Rock Palace name down a while back, but God bless him.
That's funny. Yep.
So last couple things, you know, and I did want to ask you, let me pull this up before I start rambling too much, but well, I'll ask you this first. I did see that the first album went gold. Do you actually have a gold record somewhere?
I do have a gold record.
What do you do with that? What does one do with a gold record?
It's on my wall. Actually right now, like I said, I don't really have a home. So it's wrapped and in a box with the rest of my like stuff, you know, with my degrees and things, they're all together. So if I lose that, there's no replacing it. So yeah, it will be on a wall once I do get my shit together and get a house or apartment or whatever. So
yeah, you got to think about it. I mean, there's, you know, gold record is, it's pretty amazing. I mean, there's bands like, you know, like Jamie Jassa from Hatebreed always talks about how, you know, he still has a nail in his wall for when he hopes to get a gold record one day. You know, so it's crazy that, you know, it's a huge accomplishment.
What?
Yeah, right? He said the only album
can't be right.
I mean, it might, maybe with streaming and everything, once they factor all that crap in, maybe it'll kind of backlog. But I think their biggest album is still only like 400,000. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Oh my God. I can't believe. Well, it's mind blowing to me because like we never got to play with Hatebreed, and that makes me die a little bit inside. But I did meet him once, and I had Satisfaction is the Death of Desire with me,
mm-hmm.
and I went onto the bus, covertly took it out of my like CD booklet because it was a big one of those big ass right. books, 200 CD books. Took it out and gave it to him. I'm like, can you please sign this? Because I just wanted him to touch something of mine. And that record is just mind-blowingly awesome. So that's amazing that they haven't reached that point. Like, they're just so huge. But yeah, sometimes it doesn't register to me how many people that is. Like that's the population of the city that I live in right now. So that's a lot of people, and it's tremendous. I still can't believe it.
And then what's your relationship with the ladies of Kitty these days?
Actually, I hung out with Mercedes last two weeks ago. We were at a party, like a not New Year's, what the hell are we talking about? oh my God, St. Patrick's Day party. And you know, she's got her own stuff now with a different band that is actually really awesome. You know, she's doing some new stuff, so it's kind of like the doom metal kind of deal, which is just really good. And so it took us a while to get to that point where we can be like just chill about everything, but like I think it had to do with just getting older and just being like, man, it's cool, like I don't give a fuck about like something I said when I was mad at you at practice once, I'm sorry, like
right.
Yeah, so we're totally cool.
And then with the documentary, it's pretty amazing. I don't know how involved you were when they first started talking about the Indiegogo and stuff like that, but I mean, for them to raise $20,000 in 8 hours, you know, just kind of shows the passion people still have for the band.
Yeah, I wasn't really involved with the whole planning aspect of it, but I couldn't believe how quickly that like caught on like wildfire. It was insane. And I believe the documentary is actually done now. Tanya, the original bass player of Kitty, told me she saw it. And I told her I refused to see it until the premiere because I want to actually see, like, you know, with everybody else kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes on a special meaning, I guess, because Trish was like a big part of that. And she just passed away recently. So that I think is why I want to wait to see it. Anyway, so yeah, I'm super excited. I think that, like, especially because it's showing parts of Kitty that I knew nothing about afterwards. I never followed them after I left the band. So it's kind of the interesting learning experience for me in a way.
Will there be any kind of performance? Have you guys talked about that? Maybe doing a few songs?
No, but I would love to do it if they're up for it.
Yeah. I think a lot of the fans would love that too.
Absolutely.
Judging by the YouTube.
Would. Yeah. It was pretty excited because I'm trying to develop my YouTube a little bit more, and people are like, yeah, you should do this or whatever. I'm like, great. I don't even have to play in my content. People just tell me what they want to see. It's fantastic.
Nice. All right. Well, we've hit roughly an hour, so let's wind this down. But I mean, so basically, right now you're talking about, I know you do a lot of blogs, web logs.
Yep.
How can people find you out there?
So I have, there are a lot of ways. Actually, I'm generally everything. So it would be Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, etc. is all going to be at Fallon Bowman. So if you type me in, that's generally what will come up. With the exception of being with my YouTube channel, which is Fallon Bowman TV, which I try and put out a video every week or so on various topics. It is not necessarily music related. It's just everything. And I am working on a bunch of collaborations right now, which I will be talking about probably on my Facebook page, which is technically my homepage as well, like my website. So that's just at Fallon Bowman. So yeah, all Fallon Bowman.
All right, one more archaeology question. What's the craziest thing you've found?
Actually, the subject of my thesis is a 2,000-year-old well and cistern.
Oh. What is that?
And it's a place where the townsfolk would keep their water supply. But what was interesting about that is that we found not burials, but there are these sort of pot, these urns that are at the bottom of it that were perfectly placed there on purpose. And we're still trying to figure out the significance of it. So it could be, I could be, you know, have an ancient curse on me right now. I have no idea, but, because we disturbed it all. And I'm told my supervisor, I'm like, are you sure we should do this? Because the last time this happened, well, not the last time, but like when the guy that opened the Tutankhamun's, you know, his tomb or whatever, they all died. So are you sure you want to? But he's like, no, it's fine. So that is the coolest thing I found so far.
Well, very cool, Fallon. Well, thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thank you very much. You have yourself a lovely evening.
You are listening to Talk To Me on Uncontrolled Noise.
And a huge thank you to Fallon Bowman for coming on. Man, what a great episode and what a great interview that was. So much fun kind of talking. And man, towards the end there, we got so like best friend level, talking about the old Pembroke Palace and all kinds of crazy stuff. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. And if you enjoyed the Talk To Me podcast, make sure you are supporting over on patreon.com/talktome. You can do a monetary donation there, and every dollar counts towards the podcast. The new website should be up soon, and man, it's looking cool. I'm loving everything about it. And if you want a Talk To Me t-shirt, make sure you're heading over to amazon.com. Searching out the Talk To Me podcast, getting yourself a Talk To Me t-shirt. They come in men's sizes, women's sizes, and even kid sizes, so you can outfit the entire family in Talk To Me tees. $20, free shipping with Amazon Prime, and all that money goes right back into the podcast. Just want to say thank you guys for listening each and every week. I'm going to leave you guys once again with Scribble doing the classic Talk To Me rap. Man, I love that. And make sure he's got a GoFundMe for his new album out. I donated a couple of bucks to it not too long ago. Make sure you're searching that out and donating to the cause. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys next Tuesday.
Do not attempt to approach. Talk to me, motherfucker. You gon' listen up close. Raised by the devil, marked by the gods to be the king of this podcast. Shit when it drops. Fucking around with Josh, get your face all split up. Get stuck in the zone when you lit up. You better shut your bitch up and pick up. When you pause that dopest weekly podcast, rock stars, the raw rap, and everything in between. You tune into the grooviest, fattest shit on the planet. Uncle Doc from this jack of all trades. We demand every single week to hear this motherfucker speak candid. Hey, breathe.
slipping. I think they might be vanished. He probably jumped the shark. Cause Tony's about to blow and leave a legendary mark. So welcome to the carnival. This shit's about to spark. If you ain't with it, then that's wicked. Gonna rip your ass apart. Talk to me. Talk to me. Talk to me. Talk to me. Talk to me.